what is the reason that you want to move to a county commission now that you've been a city council person for a while?
Well, my family has spent many years on the north side. My grandparents were in the Shadel area, and my parents raised us partly in the northern part of the county out near Fairwood in the Mead area. And then we moved back in the city closer to my grandparents into the urban core. So I've lived both in the city and the county. And while I've done that, and I raised my children on the north side too, and they went to Mead High School, I really saw where the county and the city were not working together on planning for the future growth of our community. And there were a lot of clashes between the neighbors and the neighborhoods and the county, and it ended up in court. There were just lawsuits and fights that were going on. And ultimately, recently, there was a settlement between some of these neighborhoods that the county did agree to that came out after a lot of negotiations with the Department of Transportation and the Department of Commerce. And I can see where there might have been a reason to fight the Growth Management Act several years ago, but that's not going away. And we need to cooperate as neighbors and neighborhoods and cities with our counties and come up with the best plan that we can afford going forward. And so when I'm at the city, I see some of this tension that happens with the county commissioners and some decisions that were made with growth and land use. And I hear a lot from neighborhoods and neighbors. I even got a call last night where someone was saying, we're tired of fighting with the county about them putting apartments out here and impacting our growth without letting us have a say. And so I have a lot of experience and background in land use. I was on the Plan Commission for 10 years as a citizen, twice elected as president, and then 2 years on the city council. So my experience in land use and land use planning, I think, can really come into play here. And it really is a good fit for me to serve in that role as a county commissioner. Yeah, there were
FutureWise one.
There were multiple cases. FutureWise was involved. Spokane County and some developers were involved in some decisions where they put the urban growth area outside of a city. And urban growth areas ultimately are to become an urbanized city or municipality because they usually use municipal services. And there was some disagreement about that. There was a philosophy that, well, you can urbanize certain areas of the county. And really, state law is saying we need to be more efficient about how much we spend on roads and how much we spend on public safety trying to reach these urbanized areas and water. We're making a huge commitment long term for our community when we do extend services outside of an adjacent urbanized growth area. And that's really where the community has a say in how they're going to spend their funds. And ultimately, that was the big piece for me, was if you're going to plan to expand an urbanized area, you'd better have a pretty good business plan and financial plan about how you're going to pay for it, because we're ultimately the ones who pay for it.
Now, I know what you're saying about the infrastructure thing, but now your opponent had made some sort of a comment, I think in the Spokesman or maybe it was the Inlander, about the UGA should have been expanded out in the area he lives in to keep the land prices lower. Do you want to respond to that?
Sure. The cost of land is just a small fraction going forward. When you're someone who's purchasing a home, you're paying for all the infrastructure, and your neighbors are paying, and the other citizens paying for all that infrastructure to reach you. So the initial building cost is only part. There's also the ongoing maintenance cost. You have your street cleaning, your snow plowing. When you have public safety that needs to reach you in an emergency, and also, you know, patrolling from the sheriff or the police department, those are all miles driven, and roads and pipes that need to be maintained. So when a community is looking at where they want to grow, you have to look at all the costs, not just the initial upfront cost.
And this UGA that's been expanded now won't be expanded again for what, like 10? Is it 10 more years?
I something? Believe the next review is after 2020. There was an agreement that had several provisions. In fact, I'm on the steering committee of elected officials, which is a group of city and county elected officials, not just from the city of Spokane, where I sit as a city councilwoman, but also other jurisdictions. And there's about 16 of us. And we sit down now because of the settlement and really talk about where does this community want to grow? Where does it need to grow? And where can we afford to have it grow?
What about and then the Growth Hearings Board had also overturned some decisions about areas that were allowed to be expanded. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to remember this. There were some of the developments that had started to be put in And then they allowed him to continue even though the Gross Hearing Board overturned that, right? How do you
That was part of the settlement agreement. And sometimes people don't necessarily immediately recognize why land use impacts them. But here's something that everyone can probably remember. We had overcrowded schools out north where we had parents lined up overnight trying to get their child registered for elementary school. Because of that lack of joint planning that was not happening between the jurisdictions, the schools couldn't keep pace with growth. And schools are obligated, and of course we want them to educate the students that are within their boundaries. But when there isn't coordinated growth, we end up with having this imbalance in our elementary schools, or a situation where they were actually needing to tell students that could see the elementary school down their street or down their road that they could walk to, that you can't attend because there's no room. You have to get on a bus and go almost another half hour to get to another elementary school. And this isn't just happening out north. This is happening on the south side. Moran and Mullen are having some crowding issues, and also in the valley. Central Valley is very full. So when you have this lack of coordination between the city and the county and in planning and an agreement on how we're going to plan, when we're going to annex, or when we're going to put in infrastructure, it costs us money in the long run. And it's not just in the normal things we talked about, water, sewer. Schools are a big chunk of our taxes when you get your tax bill. And new schools are very expensive, and we need to bond for them. So it needs to be part of the community discussion. And that's what I hope to bring to the county commission, and start a more open dialogue with these jurisdictions, with the school districts, and with the smaller cities as well.
Okay. And let's see. Well, this is kind of similar. I was looking at his page. He mentions kind of being pro-property rights, and he's worried about overstepping of authority by various agencies, including ecology and I think DNR. Do you have concerns when you see somebody saying something like that?
I've been working with city and the county at first as just a resident, seeing the impacts of uncoordinated growth for well over two decades. And when we start talking about property rights, we have to realize that property rights belong to each of the people who own the property. But once you step off that property, or once you start using public infrastructure, then you need to bring the public into the discussion. So if you want to drill a well to get your water, if you want to put in a private road, then that's certainly within your rights. But when you start needing to upsize water towers and sewer pipes and widen a road, that becomes more of a public discussion and commitment of public funds. And we shouldn't have the ability to just commit public funds without planning for it and without knowing where the money is going to come from. And that's where my concern is with the county budget, because we are making commitments and having people in areas where maybe we can't give them the level of service that they deserve for an urbanized area. And I heard from someone last night. They said, we're not getting sidewalks in our neighborhood, and we're pretty upset about that. And I said, I can see why. I mean, you've got a big neighborhood coming in, and you need kids to be able to walk to school. And, you know, there are codes that say that you should do that. So, again, opening it back up to the public, I think this will be a big change, a refreshing change for the county commission. I think they've been making inroads toward that, but it's time to bring some of that back to the table.
Okay. A lot of the county revenue spent on criminal justice, do you have specific ways you think that should be trimmed, or what's the main problem there?
There are many ways that we can make improvements under the Blueprint for Reform and the Smart Justice methods that are working in other communities. And we won a MacArthur grant, over $1 million, to come in to get the jurisdictions to come up with a better plan on how to handle our suspects and our criminals and our judicial review. One of the key areas is to find out how dangerous these suspects are when we pick them up, because often they are processed based on our volume and how busy we are at booking. And that could mean that they could stay a night or two, and we pay over $130 a night for that. But maybe it was just a failure to appear and they got picked up on a, they were speeding or something like that. They're not a violent criminal, and their offense is not something that would put the community at danger, yet we're paying a lot of money for them to be housed in a very expensive way. Mm-hmm. And so this new procedure would be an assessment of how violent they are when they come in, and they would potentially have home monitoring or some other commitment to appear in the future. And this has apparently been working in other areas. Also, these diversionary courts that you may have heard about, veterans court, mental health court, drug court, or addiction court, a juvenile court has their own separate methodology. But finding out what people really need, we've been doing this at the city level through the municipal court, and really providing, having people come to court and working with a judge, but and the attorneys, but also getting them the services that they may need. And so this diversionary court is really helping people instead of, again, locking them up and not addressing the need, that the cause that got them in there in the first place.
But at the same time, you may have people that are saying, we have so much property crime, you know, like I'm talking about repeat offenders in terms of burglaries and stuff. And so is that the real problem, why the jail and everything's filled up? Or is it a case where there's a lot of nonviolent offenders that should go out, and we could have more room for these repeat offenders as far as property crimes?
You're hitting on all the prongs. So the mental health issue is a very important piece. We have a lot of people who are in our jail that need mental health services, and we are considered a mental health facility because of that. But on the property crime issue, one of our problems is state law. And state law at one point decided, because of financial reasons, or at least what I've been told, is that the state is not requiring our property crime offenders after conviction to be monitored once they get out or serve their time. And so we do have a little bit of a catch and release system. This is unique, apparently, to Washington State, and why our numbers seem to be higher than the rest of the country. Also, when they come into the system, if they're, like you mentioned, if there isn't room, and that property crime is not considered to be a violent crime, and I've heard from the sheriff on this, mm-hmm. and the difficulty there is sometimes it may not start out as a violent offense, but you wouldn't want to interrupt someone in the middle of a property crime. They might have a weapon. They could be a violent person. They just didn't get caught. Mm-hmm. So just to say property crime criminals or suspects are not violent may not be the case. So that's where this risk assessment tool comes into play. There's a new part of this grant is to assess that potential criminal for their risk to the community and make a decision there. Or are they in the property crime business because they have an addiction? Mm-hmm. And that is something that I hear from officers. That is where having that upfront assessment and intervention before we spend a lot of money putting them up in full service jail is working in other communities, and why the grant came to us to say, Spokane, you have a real opportunity here, mm-hmm. and we'll really find out how much jail space we need after we implement this. It's going to take a while, though.
Okay. What about the jobs thing? I know that Al French has always touted himself as being kind of one of the guys that was able to bring jobs in. But I guess kind of an overall question, partially the jobs thing, but also maybe the connection between some of the current board members and GSI. I mean, are they too closely associated with GSI? They always talk about that.
Well, this seat that I'm running for is a open seat, because the commissioner who held it went to go run Greater Spokane Incorporated. Mm. And the county commission, or the Spokane County, is a large donor to Greater Spokane Incorporated. One of my concerns is there are several other business associations in the community that do similar work, not exactly the same type, but we have the Garland Business Association. We have, Spokane Valley Chamber of Commerce. We have other West Plains Association. So we have many other groups that are doing good work, local business work. So at least at the city of Spokane, part of the dialogue that we've been having, because the city of Spokane also does give some support to Greater Spokane Incorporated, mm-hmm. Which some people may not know, it used to be the Economic Development Group, and then there was the separate Spokane Chamber of Commerce, and they merged. Right. So in that, that has such a long history in Spokane. It's obviously something that I support, and we were members. my family was for many, many years. But we also need to recognize the other great associations and business groups that are doing fine work in Spokane, too. So it's kind of an a fairness issue for me in terms of does the government just support one agency, or should we make it a grant process where you apply? How much money should our county tax dollars go toward a private business association? I think that's what we have to have for a public discussion. And so I would like to have that discussion next time we look at those contracts and those grants.
So what about just the overall job attraction? I know there was like a couple cases where some of those West Place businesses got, you know, I don't know if it was like tax breaks or certain kind of, I think Al French in one case got them through some requirements on their building, you know, the zoning requirements for height or something. But I mean, do you want to discuss that just overall philosophy about bringing in new business?
Well, my family's been in business here for a very long time. My grandfather started Rods Electric and helped build Expo 74. My other grandfather had a business. He was in the pharmacy business in the northeast part of the city. Mm-hmm. And my family has always believed that business is best that's grown local. So my first interest is to see the current and existing businesses that we have here get support. I always shop inside the city limits as much as possible. And really, what can we do to help through our municipal governance to improve the centers and business centers that we have here, obviously downtown, but, you know, up on the South Hill, Lincoln Heights, Manitou Center, up on the north side, Shadle Center, 5 Mile Shopping Center, Northtown. What can we do to make that more walkable, to encourage new housing types to go in so people can live and work near their conveniences, near their grocery store, near the, you know, their medical center that they want to have? And we have 20 centers and corridors that we're working on that in the city. Mm-hmm. But in terms of jobs, I guess my philosophy is I don't think government brings jobs. I think our job is to deliver services to the people who support, you know, the jurisdiction. And that's really our ultimate job. And we can help with making sure that we are supporting the local businesses that we have here and putting the best face on and be the great community and improve our quality of life. And that's about the best thing we can do to attract. Do I think we should give certain people some incentive to go into certain areas? Sometimes I think that's okay. If we have a targeted area and we've really said, hey, downtown, we need more housing, so we're going to step up and the city's going to spend a little more on improving some of the sewer connections. And we did that. We said we're going to improve the street front and say this is a real targeted area. I'm okay with that, but I don't think we should do these sort of one at a time incentive breaks. I don't know if that's actually happening or not. You asked that question in terms of saying, well, it's just about jobs, because what can happen, and I've seen it happen in this community, is a new business will come in and say, we're bringing all these jobs, and then 2 years later, they'll move out. Mm. So how does that help us? I'm not sure it does. And it is a risk when you do that, but it's something that I really feel strongly about is the first thing we need to do is take care of our homegrown businesses here.
Okay. So what about the overall topic of transportation, but more specifically this, I mean, I guess the new STA proposal. I know that was kind of a source of divisiveness on the commission between Shelley and Al French. But, I mean, you don't have to weigh on specifically their differences, but just what's your overall opinion on the transpo thing and maybe the STA proposal?
Well, when I saw how close the vote was the first time and on probably one of the tougher times to make a decision on whether or not we should do this investment. It happened during the month that we were paying our tax, our IRS tax bills, and then our property tax bills. So it was at the end of April, a tough time to say, hey, should we invest in this? And so when it came back so close, and clearly several of our cities said, yes, we absolutely need improved bus service. It'll improve our roads. We'll deliver workforce. People need this to get to their medical appointments. They need to get to shopping. They need to get to school. A lot of our kids use the public system to get to school in our colleges. What we did was we went back and we looked at how can we do a better job of forecasting our expenses and our revenues. Let's get more data and really see if we can really cut this down to the absolute minimum in terms of cost of potentially increasing a sales tax. What I think the big discussion was at the STA level about this new proposal, which is 1/10 to start, and then if needed, could go up to a second tenth if the funding wasn't quite there. It's not an absolute. It's really up to it, – there is some timing that's been put in place in the proposal, but the board has the ability to – you know, stave that off if financing is available. And we do think we're getting some major grants, too, if this proposal goes forward. But what we...
Because you've worked with STA on this, correct?
I've been on the board for over 2 years. Okay. And so I think what the real division was on the board was whether or not to put it out to the voters again. And right. I really believe that the voters... This is a different proposal. I mean, this is about improving service.
Because didn't the other one go up to 3/10?
Correct.
Okay.
And this can go up to 2, but I really like this. It's,
yeah.
But it doesn't have to. It's really if needed.
Okay.
And so what I like about this is it's more flexible. It's less amount of sales tax. And I really think that there's more improvements that everyone will see the benefit for. It's about what I'm hearing about a 25% improvement of Spokane Transit almost system wide.
Okay.
And so I think that this is a better proposal, and I think it's got a better shot of the voters saying that makes sense.
Okay.